This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 49 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com. Horsemanship Radio is a part of the family of the Horse Radio Network. And today we have two persons from absolutely different parts of the world. We have from Brazil to Australia, yet horses are completely relevant in both of their lives. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to the Horsemanship Radio. Thank you for joining us. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 15th and the 30th of the month, and I have my producer, Jen, with me today. Hi, Jen.
Hello. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm getting excited to see you pretty soon. I know by the time people maybe hear this, you'll be on the road and coming our way, and I can't wait to meet you out on the West Coast and see you in your pajamas with my pajamas. I got horsey pajamas, too.
We're going to have a pajama party.
Have a pajama party.
Pajamas and s'mores.
Yeah. Okay. You bring the s'mores. I'll bring the pajamas.
There we go.
But I want to hear, I haven't caught up with you for a while about some of the lessons on the uni and what you're working with Beaker and Scooter. Tell me a little bit what's going on.
Well, I was on Monty Roberts University the other day. And I, as our listeners know, I've been playing around a lot with Pablo, who's the next door neighbor's horse.
Right.
Lives in the same farm. It's all one big farm here. And doing a lot of things with him. But I got to thinking about Jamie's video that she posted where she taught her Mustang Thor to move over to the mounting block and to stand quietly to be mounted.
Right. Thought,
that's such a cool skill set. Let me try it and see if I can do it. Well, it was an epic fail. So I went to Monty Roberts University and I said, I need some help with this. So I watched the first video on the instructions. And discovered what I was doing wrong for poor Beaker, because Beaker's really good at standing still to get mounted.
Okay, that's good.
That's great. Safe. It's awesome, because I'm a person of a certain age and it takes me a little while to get on a horse.
Yeah, give me a break here. Yeah.
Stand still.
Stand still.
And he's shaped a little bit like an apple, so the saddle isn't not as stable as it could be.
Right.
It's kind of roly-poly. So this is a great skill set to have, but I got to thinking about that. And I thought, well, we're going to do this. And I watched the video. And because I'm a visual learner, I do best watching something and then trying to replicate it. Mm-hmm. I was able to discern what I was doing wrong that kept Beaker from even attempting it, because he wasn't even going to try it. So just now I haven't had a chance to yet, and I have to go out and try it in person. But I thought, you know, having your horse be comfortable and obedient at stepping his body towards your own on cue when asked to could be a really, really useful skill beyond mounting blocks, because not everybody uses one, not everybody wants one. But I thought, you know, if you're working with your horse, you have him on a lead rope and you need him to step to the side towards you, what a handy thing. Like, you're walking up to the ramp of a horse trailer and you've gotten him a little bit off center. You can just ask him to step towards you. Or you are at a crowded horse show grounds and somebody else's horse comes over and is getting a little bit too close to your horse.
That's right. That's a good point too. Yeah.
That's right. So those were a couple of the ways I thought would be really, really useful. So I've gotten the first video down pat now. Had to watch it a couple of times to get it all in. And now I started on the second video. So I'm going to get the first two under my belt, and then I'm going to go out and give it a try with Beaker and see if we can't take the first couple of steps. I've got a sneaking suspicion he's not going to learn it quite as quickly as the horse in the video.
Well, and actually that horse did actually learn it. It's not
really
like time-lapse photography or anything. Yeah, it was pretty amazing. But you know, a lot of them do. I mean, even the horses that have never stood still to mount, it's like you watch the light bulb go off, like, oh, that's what you wanted. You just want me to come over to that little box thing, you know? Yeah. And, you know, so the first thing you did probably was the standing still. You got that down. That's like one of those six imperatives. And, you know, a nice quiet horse loves to stand still, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good. I don't have to do anything. So that's good, because more people get hurt at the mounting block. You know, that's like the number one accident.
Yes. It's kind of like airplanes. Yeah. The crashes happen on takeoff and landing.
Yeah, that's
well,
it. Very
with horses,
exciting.
Lots can go wrong when you mount and dismount. That's correct.
It's true. Exactly right. Because, you know, a lot of people try to mount on silly things too. Either they're from the ground and, you know, it's not, we're not as bouncy as we used to be and we don't get in the saddle as fast. But also because a lot of people try to mount on a fence or mount on something stationary. That means if the horse doesn't stay with you, you're doing the old, you know, split-a-roo or something. And, yes. And a lot of people tell us about getting hurt in those problems. So really you want, instead of you coming to the horse, you want that horse to come to you. So right. Hang in there and keep watching those, because what you're seeing is that horse is disengaging that hind end. Because usually right. It's, you get that hind end to come mm-hmm. around and then you're good. And a lot of people forget that the head needs to go away from you in order to get that hind end. Because a lot of us, you know, we know about kicking, right? Bring the head to you and right. You won't get kicked. It's pretty hard to. Except for the really clever Mustang, it's pretty hard to get kicked. But so it's that idea of really doing your groundwork ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you've really got the horse listening, we like to use those long lines. And we have a 17-foot long line that is perfect for this. Because
I have one of those.
Do you?
I have the pretty blue one that I got from you guys.
Oh, yeah,
so
good.
That, yeah, so we I have that. So it's I've got plenty of length yes. to use that
plenty
with.
Plenty of length and then, to play with it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then just to make things more complicated, I'm going to try to take that skill set and use it for Scooter, Glenn's driving pony.
Okay.
Because he is just naughty about getting hitched. We've gotten to the point now that getting harnessed, we've got good behavior now.
Okay.
But actually getting connected to the cart, he's really, really fidgety. But he doesn't have the standstill skill set. So what I'm going to have to do with him is go back and watch the videos on teaching the standstill skill set. First,
get your dually. That's right. Get your dually.
Yes.
So this, you know what? 90% of the horses out there that are performing at a high level don't have the six imperatives. And if you don't have the six imperatives, so the imperatives are
write this down, people.
Standing still at the top, start there. Cause you can do that when they're young, you know, before you even have a saddle on them, you can teach that. Then you got turning left, turning right, going forward, going back. Now, it sounds really simple, right? But, you know, there's a lot of horses. People don't ask them to back up. People, you know, let them kind of move around when they should be just moving forward and being with you on that lead. And, you know, obviously turning left and turning right, you got to have that in your tool bag.
So, yes, important.
But standing still is really kind of the top of the list. I hate to say it. So, because a lot of people don't ask their horse to stand still. So that, you know, when you got that imperative down, and then when you got what we call the dually dance down, that's where you move forward, your feet move forward, and they move forward with you, wherever your bubble space is that you train for, you know, make sure that their nose is right there. And then when you move back, and I don't mean turn around and move backwards, I mean literally move backwards, their nose should move backward, their feet should move backward too. So that's like that next thing where you get in the dually dance going. And I say dually because, you know, they feel that pressure, that little twist around there, and they know exactly where you want them. Because as soon as your hand just closes on that line, then that means forward or backward, that halter is telling them where they're the most comfortable. So they're training themselves. They right, literally, right. It's the easiest tool. I mean, when Monty or anybody is working with a dually makes it look so easy, guess what? It's actually the halter that's making it look
well,
so easy.
Monty makes it look easy. It is not always easy because
it's timing.
Your own body language plays into it as well. And that's another skill that Scooter did not have when we got him. Is he did not have the ability to take a step back, not one step, not one single hoof could step back. And the dually halter really made a big difference there because he didn't have, whenever he felt any pressure on a halter, he would lean into it. So when we put the dually halter on him, it was unfamiliar. So as soon as he felt pressure, he didn't say, oh, got to lean on that because it was something unique. And we've carried that through now. When he wears his dually halter, he's not dragging and pulling because he knows, oh, I release from that. That's what that's for. And that's made a big difference.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Because it's that little bit of a twist. It's not just you know, there's no pain, obviously, because if you infuse pain in this, you're done. They don't trust you. They don't want to be any part of this.
They don't want to be anyone near you. Yeah.
not fun. Yeah. So keeping this fun is a big part of it. And I think this is going to be really fun for you. I mean, you saw that Jamie had fun doing the mounting block with her Mustang Thor. And, you know, so a lot of that is the work that we just described. So go.
Really excited about it. And
come back. And good.
Teaching Beaker to disengage his hindquarters from different sides of his body because he's a little bit older and he's kind of stiff and creaky. So he is not prone to volunteering those behaviors before, say, you know, you really do have to move your hindquarters. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. He's kind of Eeyore-ish. So I'm excited about giving them a reason to do it and be successful and go, yay, good job. So
good. When you get that done, you send me a little, you know, iPhone file or something, a little video.
I need to get a GoPro for my helmet so people can watch this.
Oh, that would be fun too. Yeah, actually, it would be really fun. I want to see how, you know, incrementally how it works. And it is incremental, you know, when the penny drops and, you know, and they understand what you're asking, they'll have so much fun with it. Because then when you're on the trail, you know, a slope becomes your mounting block, a log becomes your, a rock becomes your mounting block, but now you're asking them to come to you as opposed to, you know, them saying, I think you can reach me from that fence, can't you? Oh, I'll take one more step over. You know, they play that
it's
game.
It's like a game.
They do. Yeah, exactly.
Keep away.
Once they know that, oh, this is the game, it's coming to you, you know, anything you kind of elevate on and stand there and clock, pretty soon they'll know what their routine is. But you've got to go through those little incremental steps where they learn to, you know, that disengaging and turning the head away, you know, getting over to you is the trick. And and forward and backwards. Sure. And a lot of horses side pass real easily, but that's when you're in the saddle. So this isn't, you know, you're teaching a different skill set for them too. And the other thing that's really fun when they get excited about that and see that that's what you want is that you literally can just start clucking. You don't need to get the reins in all those positions that we talk about getting that disengagement. You literally can cluck. But here's the trick. Love on them so much when they take those steps in the right direction, just, you know, up and down. Neck and across the bottom and just let them know.
That was something I found very revealing about the first video on bringing your horse to the mounting block is, and again, this is a little bit different than what I might have learned 25 years ago in horsemanship school, so to speak. You don't get on. You teach the horse the move, but and you say, and you reward them, give them the pat, and you remove the suggestion to bend and move. But you're not getting on every time. It's not getting on and off and on and off and on and off to start. You create that behavior first. And I thought, oh, wow, I never would have thought to do it that many times before I went ahead and put my foot in the stirrup. But it makes perfect sense because otherwise the horse thinks, oh, you mean I do that and then you get on and we have to go work hard?
And I go work. Yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly right.
You separate those a little bit.
Yeah. So it really is a reward. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there we go. That's my next little project. Beaker is going to learn to come to me and stand at the mounting block, and Scooter is going to learn to stand still. So if I can figure out a way to film myself with my camera without just getting a lot of shots of my kneecap, I will post those.
Well, maybe have Glenn get out there with you a little bit. But yeah, I look forward to that. I really do. I'll watch the progress on that. I'll be proud of you.
There we go. So that's what's up in my little world. What have we got coming up on the show?
Well, we've got some really great people that, you know, this poor Rachel got up at, I think, 4 a.m. or something to do this interview. But we were able to get Monty and Eduardo Moraida from Brazil and Rachel Kerrigan from Australia all in the same interview, all in the same episode. And we're really excited to share amazing things that they're doing with their lives and horses.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts Willing Partners graduate. He's a sugar bear. You know, investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios, risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at ifa.com. That's IFA as an Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Eduardo Moraida studied civil engineering in Rio de Janeiro, but embarked in business after getting a scholarship to study economics at the University of California, San Diego. He went into banking and then became a founding partner of Brazil's Plural Bank. Having always loved horses, Eduardo bought a horse off the internet and promptly got tossed off, badly hurt. And in the hospital, he read Monty Roberts' autobiography, The Man Who Listens to Horses. And he decided to go to California with a friend in 2009 to study with Monty Roberts for a week as an auditor. Let's listen in on what happened after that. Welcome, Monty Roberts. And I understand we have a special guest with you today, all the way from Brazil, my dear friend, Eduardo Moraida. Can you both say hello to me?
Hello.
Hi, Debbie. Hi,
hey.
Monty.
My favorite guys in the world. I'm so happy to have you here on Horsemanship Radio. And I'm so glad to introduce Eduardo to our family, Dad. We've introduced a lot of friends on this show, but we have not yet introduced Eduardo, and I'd like you two to do a little catch-up for us so that the audience gets to know who Eduardo is, too, and how important both of you are to each other.
Well, I want to first tell your audience that if we've neglected to have Eduardo on to this point, let's get with it, because this is an incredible human being here that read about me in my first book, and then decided to come out of the hospital where he got hurt from a horse and come to one of my courses. And he sat there for 5 days, and I could just feel that he was soaking up everything I said. And he used it like it's a complete change in his life, a different way of thinking to take violence out of the training of horses. But he took it on to human beings, and in his life, his whole demeanor changed, and he went like a madman back down to Brazil and he started doing horses that, you know, he didn't touch a horse while he was here on that first course.
That's right.
And then we got videos back of him starting horses and putting the first rider on. It seemed like 1 week later, and I was going, whoa, hang on here. And since then I have learned that I had on my hands the most incredible student that any instructor could ever have, because he took on every nuance of what I said and he made use of it. He applied it. He got himself fit from being very badly injured. Mm-hmm. He got himself fit to the extent that he used myself and then another Nuno Cobra, another man from Brazil there, as his models for changing his life and getting him in physical condition. And so often I've said, you know, if we want to get our horses right, we have to first get ourselves right. Mm-hmm. And Eduardo has taken that to a new level. Eduardo Moraida is one of the favorite people of my entire career, and we haven't spent near enough time together, but it seems like if we spend 1 hour, it's like spending a year with the average student.
Nice.
He is a genius.
Mm-hmm. Well, wow. I think I entered in the wrong call. Is it me, Monty?
Yeah.
Is Eduardo?
You
talked all those things?
That's you. That's you.
Thanks
you
so
know,
much,
you
man.
Know
it was. I mean, with no doubt, the best trip of my entire life. And I arrived in California being one Eduardo, and I left California being a complete different Eduardo. And I'm still finding out who this different Eduardo is, because that was the beginning of a change that keeps happening in my life every single day. And it all made a lot of sense for me when I saw Monty doing the first join up on that course. And I think I had like a real advantage comparing to all the other students. And my advantage was that I knew nothing about horses, you know. Yeah. I was a blank page. I had no vices. I had no things that I knew before that I could use to try to contest Monty Roberts' methods and say, oh, my methods are better. Oh, I'll use this and I won't use that. I knew nothing. So everything I had was what I was learning from Monty those days. So I think I could have like a very peer way of learning everything that was taught in terms of the concepts of Monty. And when I was watching Monty doing the join up, that was much more than just a relationship of a man and a horse. That was a metaphor for many things that I see in life. You know, I was passing through a divorce in my life, and I was also like changing jobs in Brazil. And when I was seeing Monty doing that communication with the horse and establishing that relationship of confidence, of trust, of partnership, that made so much sense in terms of what I needed in my career, in my relationship with my ex-wife, with my kids. And I came back to Brazil trying to dive deep into those concepts, but on this broader way, you know. I thought that I was like into the most phenomenal discovery anyone has ever had on the face of Earth in terms of human and animal behavior, because that's what happens inside the round pen. That's animal behavior, you know. Mm-hmm. And I took it to all other parts of my life where I could test those concepts. So I tried the join up concepts not only with horses in Brazil. And trust me, when they saw that I was like a Brazilian that used to surf like 1 year ago and now was dealing with horses, and I was visiting their ranch with a new method, they wanted to prove that I was so wrong by doing that they would just bring me the craziest and meanest horses that they had in their entire ranch, you know. So I really, really faced some very dangerous situations. But I was so confident on the method that I cannot remember one of those situations where I thought that I wouldn't be able to do it. I was always so sure about the method because we're dealing with the natural communication of two animals, us and the horses. And when there is a communication, there is a proven communication, and there are two parts involved that want to be better off after the communication, there's no way it can go wrong, you know? Mm. And I had this confidence before entering the round pen, and it always worked. So I tried to use it with other animals, and I tried with some crazy animals like alligators in the swamps of Brazil, and it worked. And I tried with chickens, and it worked. And I tried with flies, and it worked. So I started to try the concepts with the education of my kids, and I did the same thing in the corporation that I worked, and it all worked so well that I decided that I just couldn't keep that only with me. And that was when I decided to write my book about the experience I had with Monty Roberts and with his methods. And that's the book that became the number one best-selling book in Brazil in 2012.
Yeah, Encantadores de Vidas, yes. And that was written about your experience with both Monty and with Nuno Cobra. But maybe a little synopsis will help people understand how you took those to your life.
Yes, I met Monty, as Daddy was saying, after an accident that I had riding a horse in Brazil. It was a horse that I knew nothing about. I bought my horse on Google. I just Googled Brazil horse, and then like there was a nice mare. She was very beautiful mare that appeared on the screen, and it was saying that it was a really calm mare and ideal for children and for people that didn't know how to ride. So that was the horse I bought, and it bucked so much the first time I rode her that it was impossible to keep myself over it, and I fell really bad over some rocks in my ranch, and I wasn't able to move like any part of my body for a few weeks, and I had about like 6 months of physical therapy, and that was when I received as a gift The Man Who Listened to Horses from Monty, And I decided that I had to meet this man that wrote all those things about communication with horses. And when I came back to Brazil, all that I was able to promote all the changes that I was talking about a few moments ago, about showing people how the relationship between two people or two animals or a people and a person and an animal, how that relationship is much more efficient when you remove completely violence out of it. Mm-hmm. And I decided that if I brought Monty to Brazil, the repercussion of that would be like 10 times higher. You know, I thought that people should not like meet these concepts and see these concepts through me. You know, I was just a disciple and a very fresh freshman in terms of being a disciple. So I decided that I had to bring the master. And I was like going for a meeting with a person to bring Monty to Brazil, the person who is responsible for the largest equestrian center in Brazil. And I suffered a very bad accident here getting a taxi in the street. Trust me, it was a really bad accident. I broke 7 bones of my left leg, and I had 80% chance of losing my left foot after that accident. And the person who helped me to recover from this accident was Nuno Cobra, maybe the most famous athlete trainer in Brazil, and responsible for training Ayrton Senna, who is the best car racer of all time for many people, you know. And when Nuno Cobra came to help me recover from this accident, and he started to teach me all his methods and concepts, I said, hey, wait a minute, I think I heard about most of this before. But that was with a guy that deals with horses, not with athletes, you know. Yeah. And then I said, how lucky I am to have suffered these two accidents and to have met these two guys, and also to have perceived that the methods of both of them are so similar. And I said, I have to write these in a book. Monty always says that luck is not what happens to us. Luck is what we do with what happens to us. Mm-hmm. And I thought that like it was very lucky that I decided to do something special with these two accidents. So I wrote a book telling about the story I had with these two masters and explaining their methods and showing people how their methods could be used not only for athletes or horses, but also for their careers and their relationship with their families, etc. And the book was a huge success in Brazil. By the way, we are about like almost 4 years after the book was released, and this is something you guys don't know. My book got back to the top 10 list of Brazil last week.
Oh, so the top, oh my goodness. Yeah. It is.
And number 8.
Number 8. Congratulations. That's amazing. 4 years later.
After 4 years. It stayed for number 1 for a long time, but I mean, 4 years after being released, the book get back to the top 10. It's something really, really rare in Brazil.
Well, yeah. Debbie, can I say something here? That
please
make sure you save all of these words, because he just wrote another book. We need to transcribe this conversation.
It's a good story.
And then we have another best-selling book here, because so many...
No, but Monty, we're talking about the same book.
Yeah, I know.
Well, Encantadores de Vidas got back to the top 10 list after 3 years, almost 4 years.
I know, but now I want these words printed, because then I want to sell that book in America and see if I can get it on the best-selling list here.
Great.
You know, it's so great to hear you say this. And there's a few things I'm going to ask Eduardo now. Like, one is, how many books have you written now?
Actually, I have written 6 books. I have published 4 of them, and I'm going to publish the 5th now.
Excellent.
So when I told your audience, Debbie, that this was a special human being, I mean, he comes on one course, he spends 5 days here, and that was the start of all of this. Then when he went back down there, he was so green with horses that at that point in time, he only knew that he had all the information necessary to keep himself safe from these dangerous horses. Mm-hmm. And he made the decision that these things couldn't go wrong because now he was able to communicate in the horse's language, mm-hmm. and he felt very safe. Now that he's more experienced, he's looking back to see, oh my word, I was in some very dangerous places there, but I'm okay. And I got hurt trying to catch a cab in the town, and I got hurt when I got on a horse and I didn't know what I was doing. But now that I know what I'm doing, I used much more dangerous horses than the street was and the first horse was, but I'm okay now. So somewhere in there with all of his books and with what I've been able to give him as a launch pad, every human being that walks on the face of this earth should have this information. Mm. You talk about best-selling books.
I would love to know when Encantadores de Vidas is going to be in the U.S. in English. When will that happen? Yeah. That's it.
Should happen.
We have to do it. Yeah, we have to do it. Yeah. And we have to do it as soon as we can.
Yeah. I think everybody will be dying to hear this story now that you've put to word. And what are the ensuing books about that you've written?
I've written one book is a fiction book. It's a philosophic book that talks about the meaning of life. Another book, it's a book that this is funny. You're gonna love this. That I used to join up concepts to teach economic concepts to people because, you know, I work on the financial markets, mm-hmm. and this book also became a bestseller. The name is Financial Whisper, just to make like something like horse whisper, something like that. And the other book that I published is called The Mountain Whisper. That is it's also a fiction about a person that learned from observing phenomena in the nature. So he goes for a mountain and he starts looking what happens around him in terms of the way the nature behaves and animals behave with nature, animals behave with animals. And he gets that lessons to apply to his life, you know. So they all talk about like similar things, you know. At the end, Daddy and Monty, I think that it's all only one thing, right? And when we find something that brings us back to the essence of life and brings us back to the harmony that we have when we're just like a child or a baby and pretty similar to how like an animal behaves, I think we can talk about any subject in life that it will make sense, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I love that, Eduardo. You know, we couldn't get away with not talking about how you two last met in June with a certain lady named Her Majesty the Queen. And I would love for you to just share what that experience was like.
No, that was amazing because the book was, my book was read by like hundreds of thousands of people in Brazil. And that made me receive a lot of letters and messages of people that read the book and got back to university at 60 years old, that lost like 100 pounds because they went back to exercising. People that decided to change their careers and work with animals to protect them. But one of the messages was really special. The message came from a commander of a police academy in Brazil, and he was saying that after reading Monty Roberts' book, The Man Who Listened to Horses, he decided to read my book, which is Encantadores de Vidas, or Life Whispers, like an unofficial translation to English, mm-hmm. and he was impressed with the philosophy described of join-up. And what he was thinking was, if a horse is trained with violence, becomes like a violent horse, maybe that happens also with human beings. And on the police academy, we treat the cadets with so much violence. Maybe that's the reason that like the policemen are so violent in our country. So he decided to invite me to the police academy, And he asked me to give a speech to all the cadets in the academy. There were about like 500 cadets there. And he wanted me to tell people about the join up concepts and about Monty Roberts' philosophy. So I talked to them about this philosophy. I talked to them about like the benefits of removing completely violence on the relationships with individuals. And it was so amazing to see that the commandant was really, really willing to apply that philosophy in the academy. And it was so impressing the effects that that could cause, because we're talking about the academy that makes the graduation of the 100,000 police people of the state of São Paulo.
Amazing.
We're talking about 40 million people that are protected by these police people. So just the city of São Paulo, we're talking about like city and suburbs of São Paulo, we're talking about 20 million people, the second most populated city in the world, just after City of Mexico. So I was saying, maybe that's, I think that's the further the join-up concepts ever went, because, I mean, to make a difference in the lives of 40 million people, it's something that will make Monty like really, really happy, you know? So I called Monty and I told Monty that Monty should come here immediately as soon as he could to see with his own eyes what was happening in a police academy because of his philosophy. So Monty came to Brazil, and I think Monty can tell a little bit about his experience here. But Monty said, we were talking, and Monty decided that Her Majesty had to know about it. So, and that's the reason why we went there. And just as a piece of information, from all the police people that the police officers that were that have graduated under the philosophy of join up, none of them has been involved with homicides in Brazil. And that's zero. We're not talking about the few of them. And the number of homicides in Brazil that are attributed for police men are in the thousands numbers, you know, and we're talking about zero. So it's pretty amazing what happened here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The statistics are just awesome. It's Comandante José Mauricio Pérez, and he was speaking with the Queen, and I heard for the first time that the first 500 cadets that went onto the streets went through 3 years with no gun-related incidences, and that followed immediately after 4,000 per year were shot by the police. Mm-hmm. It's a military police, and for so many decades, they were operating on the basis of first you have to protect yourself by shooting, and then you ask the questions later. Mm-hmm. And now Colonel Mauricio Pérez has turned that around and taken the violence out of it. And so they don't get violence back so much. And yes, we live in a very dangerous world, and there's so many terrible things going on. But if we can do our little bit to take that violence down, maybe it's going to help change the world. We hope it does. But it was unbelievable to stand there and watch the Queen give him a certificate that says for his remarkable work to reduce the violence in the police force of Sao Paulo, Brazil, was so gratifying. You just, there's not words to describe it. And the Queen was so happy on that day, and she's told me since then several times that she was very happy to do this because she is a world leader, and she hopes that she can influence the reduction of violence too.
That's amazing. Well, the both of you have done a great work, and by that I mean it in two ways. I mean that you not only are doing really good stuff, but you're also doing it in great measure. You're impacting people on multiple continents this time, and it's no longer something just in the round pin with you two. You have actually expanded it to a global impact, and I really appreciate you sharing your stories with us. We've got to have you back, Eduardo. Let's hear some more news about what's happening in Brazil post the Perez award and all the good news that's coming out of Brazil. We want to have you back and talk about judo. That's something we haven't even touched on that you're involved in now heavily too.
Yeah.
And your marriage to Juliana to finish off that circle of life with your family. And beautiful, beautiful stories coming out of both your lives.
And talking about circle of life, there's only one concept of join up that I was never able to understand. And every next year, it gets more difficult for me to understand, which is the concept that Monty uses, that he had reversed the cycle of life, because every new year, Monty seems younger. So I don't know what he learned with this join up. That I met Monty with 75 years old, and after 5 years, he's 70, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know what he's doing for that.
You know, Eduardo, that my theme for 2015 is 80 at 80. You know that. And in all of my shows, I do 80 consecutive push-ups for my 80 years. And this morning, I did my most 122 consecutive push-ups. So,
oh, come on. Really?
Yeah, 122.
I'm telling you. I don't know what to drink on that soup, Monty, but I'll find out.
Yeah, it's working, whatever it is. Yeah, you know what it is? You know what it is, Eduardo? I think it's life. It's life making better life. And
exactly.
getting it right with people brings you back so much joy that you can't get old, because if you get old, then you get tired and then you stop doing things. And when you stop doing things, you stop getting excited and you have to use it or lose it. I'm having more fun than I ever had in my entire life.
And I'm glad I'm able to participate in this fun with you, because life has been much more fun after I met you, man.
Oh, well, it's been more fun for me too after meeting you. And I want to come down there in December and meet with Carlos and all those people down there and get everything straightened out. And then I want to go in January to Portuguesa and meet the people there. It's going to be fantastic.
Let's do it, man.
I'm there
with you for whatever you do here and for whatever you need me.
All right.
Okay,
that's,
man.
Awesome.
Okay.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thanks
for both
lot.
Of you joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks so
on
much.
Radio.
I enjoyed
Bye.
So much talking to you.
I enjoyed it too. Thank you very much, Eduardo.
Bye-bye. Ciao, Danny.
Obrigada. Ciao, ciao.
We all hear about omega-3 and how important it is for your horse's nutrition. But why? Well, simply put, horses were created to get all of their nutrition from live natural grasses. Omega-3 is an essential fat found in many types of live grasses, and it's critical to the horse's health. If they were living on live grasses 24/7, they would be receiving enough omega-3. But in today's world, most horses are fed commercial feed and forage as their primary nutrition, and most of these are lacking in omega-3. That's where Omega Fields comes in. All of Omega Fields' flax-based products provide a balanced essential profile of omega-3, 6, 9, and may be helpful in alleviating problems related to skin, coat, hoof, joint, and sand colic. One of Omega Fields' terrific products is Omega Horseshine. Omega Horseshine is an omega-3 stabilized ground flaxseed supplement for horses to help maintain a shiny, healthy coat, strong, solid hooves, and top performance for horses in all life stages. Omega Fields provides the best human-grade, non-GMO ground flax that can help horses with dry, scaly, itchy skin, joint pain and inflammation, poor hoof growth, allergies, and more. Don't just listen to Debbie and I. Alexandra, a customer of Omega Fields, says any horse I ever own, I will feed them Omega Horseshine, and I will recommend it to anyone. You can get your Omega Horseshine today at OmegaFields.com, or just for our listeners, get 15% off using the coupon code MONTY2015. All one word, it's MONTY2015 for 15% off your next order at OmegaFields.com. That's OmegaFields.com.
Rachel Carrigan spent 7 years serving in the Royal Australian Air Force and saw active service as a part of the International Coalition Against Terrorism under Operation Slipper. She was trained as an electrical engineer and after leaving the military was a successful project manager and contract administrator with heavy industry and defense. But when symptoms of post-traumatic stress changed her, she dropped out of life and became a recluse, relying on her young daughter to become the head of the household. In 2013, she took a chance on horses and Monty Roberts' encouragement. Here is her story. Well, welcome. I'm privileged to have two special people on Horsemanship Radio today. I've got Monty Roberts back. Hi, Dad.
Hello.
There he is. He's all warmed up. And Rachel Kerrigan. Say hi, Rachel.
Hello.
You can tell Rachel is all the way down under. She has an Australian accent, and she is actually getting up at 6 a.m. for this interview, and it's freezing. So if her teeth chatter a bit, never mind. It's because she's cold and and not nervous at all. We're just going to have a fun little conversation about horses, which we all love, and a chance meeting down in Australia on a recent tour that Dad was on. And I would love to have you two just have a conversation and just remind us all the good things that came out of your chance meeting and just forget that we're even here.
Okay. I'm ready.
Go for it.
You know, Rachel, it's so great to speak with you. And it's just as it often is, it's just so little and so precious the time that I have with people that mean so much to me. I spoke with Eduardo Moraida from Brazil this morning, and he's just such a special student of mine and has been for 5 years, but we just don't get enough time together, and that's been the same between you and myself as well. You are a very, very special student for me. And the reason I tell you that, Rachel, is that, you know, when the Discovery Channel first came to me and asked me if I would do a clinic for them that they could put on video and do a TV show about the veterans coming back and using horses to help them. And I agreed, and I asked them at that time for 10 military returnees. And 30 days to make a difference. And the reason that I said I wanted 10 and the 30 days is that I did not want to fail. I wanted to do as much good as I could. And when they carved me down in the last days to 3 returnees for 3 days, I was furious, Rachel. I thought, what can I do in 3 days? It's just not possible to make changes like I want to make in 3 days' time. But I went through with it because we'd already planned it, and I didn't want to disappoint everybody, so I went through with it. And in 3 days, we changed the lives of 3 returning military people from the United States of America. Like I don't think anybody's been changed before. One guy went from no horse experience at all to being a professional horse trainer now. And another one was a poor lady that was incarcerated for assault and battery in her city. And now she has a responsible job with the government of the United States and has her life back and smiles again. And then I met you, Rachel, down in the Sydney area there. And for crying out loud, we had, 20, 30 minutes together at the first demonstration. And then it was so profound that I wanted you to come across to Perth and get another day or so over there, of which we had maybe 2 more hours together. And it's amazing. It's amazing what you've done. And can you tell the listeners in Debbie's program here, what the heck was it that the horses and I did to change your life? Because we only had a precious few hours with you since I've met you. And yet, when I meet you now, and I did last autumn for the second trip that I've met you on, you were a different person. and your daughter was a different person. You were so much more with life again and happy again. Tell us, what in the world is it?
Ah, that's a big question. I don't really remember much from Sydney. The main thing I remember is the breath of that horse on my neck with that first join-up. That was just an absolutely amazing experience that I will never, ever forget. It just seemed to break down so much. I just remember crying and you hugging me, and it just, in that moment, it was like, you know what, I've got the choice. I can exist how I'm existing, or I can, you know, do what this animal's done and decide to trust some people and try to live my life again. And that was a very profound moment for me. And then going to Perth and spending some time with you and hearing some things that I probably needed to hear, that people, I think, sometimes tiptoe around or don't know how to treat people that are suffering PTSD. And, yeah, you said a few things to me that were some home truths, the most profound probably being that I need me more than anyone else needs me. I need to need me again. And I did a lot of thinking after that, and I've got my horses, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to try some of this stuff with my horses. And just in that period of time, my horses have been amazing teachers. They just taught me that, you know, I've worked with some horses that have had some real trust and anxiety issues, and I've just seen the changes in them and have realised that, you know, if these horses can do it, then I can do it as well. And that's what I've been trying to do. So that's got me to where I am now, and your continued support. So it's been amazing.
Well, the thing is, you know, if you talk to the psychiatrists of the various organisations, and I work in Australia, United States, and in England too, and you talk to the people that really know the psychiatry involved in dealing with post-traumatic stress, and they just cannot believe that in the number of minutes or hours that I spend, that we make the changes that we make. I think they believe that we're faking it, that we really don't make the changes, or we spend a lot more time than we're admitting we spend. But you and I know the truth, and you are such an example of a fast-track change that you really stand out in the world, Rachel. I don't know that any sufferer from post-traumatic stress has ever changed with the rapidity that you've accomplished. It's just unbelievable. And I know that you know yourself and you know the truth, but what do you think the difference was between that and what the various veterans administrations do for their people?
One of the biggest things for me was probably when you said to me that this doesn't have to control your life. It does get better. That's something that you don't hear. That was a real eye-opener for me. Everyone says you've got post-traumatic stress. It's going to be, this is as good as life gets. You're going to need to be medicated. You're going to need this. You're going to need that. You know, there's other alternative therapies out there. But everyone says, and I think that puts it in your head, that this is as good as it gets. You turned around and said to me, no, you don't have to live like this. You can still be a person. And that was a very, very big thing for me. You saw me as a person and not just a label. And I think that's one of the biggest things. When you talk to people, when you've got post-traumatic stress, they put this label automatically on you, and that's how they see you, and that's how they define you, and that's how they talk to you. Whereas you saw me as a person. You saw me as someone that has promise, that can keep moving forward, and that can get through this and can fight it. And that was just an unbelievable moment. And then coupled with how the horses react, and that whole join-up process, it's just the most amazing feeling, and it's a feeling that I wanted to keep going. And it really gave me the courage, and it really gave me the motivation to keep moving forward, to have someone have that little bit of belief in you. And then coupled with that again, the horses and the fact that flight fight animals, to me that's what PTSD is like as well. You are constantly in that flight and fight mode. So if a horse that's a flight animal can trust someone that's so broken and can see themselves as not worthy of anything, and to have this animal that you've never met before come up and trust you, and then have this person who I admire so much say to me that, you know, you can have a life, that just made such a difference to me. It's been unbelievable.
Well, Rachel, the thing is that it might be difficult for you to understand this, but can you grasp the inspiration that you've been to me? Because I couldn't possibly believe when I started all of this that it would be this profound. And now I know I can't quit. I know that too many people need me to quit, and I can't back up from these psychiatrists that talk to me and say, oh, I guess you're right, that it's not possible to do this, because it is possible to do this. And I'm seeing it not just with you, Rachel, but quite a few people, and it's just that you spent less time with me than most of them and made the most profound difference in your life that I have ever seen with any of my victims, people that have gone through war and come out of it with stress-related injuries to their brain. You, Rachel, and this lady called Alicia Watkins, which you may have read about or you may have seen on video or something, but you and Alicia Watkins have made the most dramatic changes. And I had Alicia Watkins for three-day clinics and then a lot of time on the phone. And I'm not minimizing her efforts, because she's just done a fantastic job, and she's graduating now from Harvard School of Psychology, and she wants to help other veterans coming back with post-traumatic stress. That's a wonderful story. It's just that I didn't have three-day clinics with you. I had a matter of hours with you, and I still saw it happen. So somewhere, Rachel, I think nature has set us up, all of us, to understand that horses can't lie and that they're not faking it at all, that this is a real change that comes over people because they can believe the horses. And we had an experience recently with a lady coming from Washington, D.C., that was not a military person and that didn't even know she had issues in her life. And she asked to do a join-up, and she did the join-up, and this poor lady broke down and was sobbing. And then she began to remember challenges in her early life that were really pretty negative for her. And she is part of the system for helping post-traumatic stress people. And she has been, I'm going back to D.C. to meet with her in a couple weeks' time, because she's helping us now to fund, through the organization that she represents, fund some more clinics here at my farm in California. And I now know, Rachel, that because of this inspiration from you and from Alicia and Alejandra Sanchez and others, I can't quit. I have to keep going. There are too many people that need me. And Rachel, they don't need, in my opinion, they don't need the pills. They don't need the substances to alter their behavior. They need themselves. They need to want to do it.
And that's exactly right. I mean, when I met you early 2013, I was on up to 30 tablets a day for controlling my mood, my anger, my depression, sleep, even what, you know, eating, things like that. And then after speaking to you, I made the decision in September 2013 to come straight off all my meds, and not thinking that I'd come off all of them, but come down and determine exactly what I needed, because I was at the point where people were saying to me, oh, you're getting that side effect now. Okay, we need to give you this tablet. Oh, you're suffering that now. And it wasn't, people weren't taking away the tablets to see where I was anymore. They were just piling them on to deal with another problem. And I, my, in my head after talking to you, and I thought, no, I can come down. I'll see what medication I actually do require, if any, and go from there. So I came down, and using my horses, I have not had to take another tablet since then.
Oh, wow. Well, Rachel, you know, I don't want to say that anybody's bad in these organizations. I think everybody wants the good things for their clients, for the people that have fought our wars for us. I think they're all trying to do their best, and I do respect the fact that most of them have spent 6 years in university learning their art, so I don't want to be negative toward them. It's just that you and I know something that they don't know, and I think it's our responsibility to bring it to the world. We can't hide it. It's too profound and positive to steal from the people that need us the most. And I would love to continue to work with you and to have you be a part of the inspiration necessary to help people on a global basis.
That would be amazing. That's my dream. I'm in the process of gathering funds at the moment to get a facility up and running to rehabilitate horses with anxiety issues. I've been doing a little bit of that on my own at the moment, and they've just been amazing teachers. But my idea is to make it a sustainable farm and have veterans come and work there that are homeless and have nothing, and to give them some choices and options and things in life and teach them some life skills. And I'd love to be able to move forward and show people that there's another way.
Oh, great. Well, Rachel, I just couldn't be happier with this quick phone call and this meeting with you once again to hear the, to hear the positive sounds of your voice and your daughter. How's she doing?
Really well. It's good to be a kid again.
Yeah.
It's been amazing for her to be a kid instead of the parent.
I know. But, somehow, Rachel, I think she'll be a stronger person for it all, and we'll make lemonade from lemons. I know that I went through some terrible things as a child, and I look back on them now as a source of strength against the kind of thing that I found was negative in my life. And perhaps your experience will be the same. I would hope so, anyway.
It's definitely made her a better person. There's a lot of good that's come out of the bad, and that's also what you've helped me realize. So,
what does she want to do with her education?
She wants to go around and travel around and do horsemanship clinics and show people the right way to look after horses, basically, is what she wants to do with her life. She wants to make sure that less and less horses get mistreated.
Oh. So we're reaching the next generation pretty rapidly here.
Definitely, definitely. She's learned a lot from yourself as well. So.
That's great. Well, Debbie, do you have anything else for us?
That's fantastic. I assume that you're talking about Borneo and some of your plans for the future when you talk about the sustainable farm.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
Well, I would love some more information. Is there anything we can do to help? And let our audience know, too, if there's anything we can do that if you've got a Kickstarter or anything like that, please, Rachel, let us help.
That would be amazing. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. And well, thank you both.
One of the things that we could do is transcribe these words, too, because they're just so profound. I want
could help a lot of people.
Them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would like to disseminate them as broadly as we can around this globe of ours, and maybe we'll reach a few people that are thinking about bombing somebody or something like that, and maybe we can make a difference. I know that the world leaders could learn from horses, too.
That's absolutely true.
If they just
true.
Wanted to do it.
It's true. Well, thank you both for your contributions, both. And I know, Rachel, you were flung into this not meaning to be a world changer, but you've become one. Tag, you're it.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you both being here today.
All right, Rachel.
And we hope to have you again. Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
and thanked is Debbie and people of her radio station for giving us the opportunity to spread the word.
Thank you. Up next, we have our trainer's tip from Shorty Graham, who's a wonderful trainer who likes us to take our time when we work with our horses. Welcome back, Shorty Graham. Thanks again, all the way from the Arizona Equestrian Connection in Camp Verde, Arizona. How are you today, Shorty?
Fantastic.
It's good to hear your voice. I understand you have a trainer's tip for us, or maybe two, the listeners of Horsemanship Radio. Please let us know.
Well, I think one of the important things that as humans we need to recognize is that horses, animals, have no concept of time. It means nothing to them. And I think with humans, we tend to go out a lot of times, particularly people that are on time constraints of like needing to get to a show, needing to get to a roping. And they really don't have the horse on a solid foundation to begin with about loading in the trailer or doing these events, or they haven't been that pleasant. And so they go out and then they turn into a grizzly bear trying to get the horse to trailer load. Or once they get to the show, their whole inside is totally stressed and they're psychologically at a high peak, which the horse feeds on.
Yeah.
And so for me, one of the things I've learned is if you have something you want to work with your horse or you want the horse to accomplish, do it when you have all the time in the world, or just go out and spend some time with your horse if you don't have a lot of time and groom it or do something you know the horse already knows to do. But recognize that when you go out there, you could be there all day if that's what it takes, but do it in a quiet and a calm manner and help the horse. Let the horse look for the answer. Ask the question and give him time enough or her time enough to find the answer and give him or her the aids that will help him find that answer. And once he gets that answer, giving that reward of releasing the pressure and saying, you know, good. And then if it's been a long haul, I quit. We don't need to go back and do it again. We'll do it tomorrow. So I think one of the things is just hammering on them to do it over and over and over again. If you can just get that little bitty try, take that and call that Dixie and then wait for the next day. And you know what? It'll come quicker and it'll be sweeter and nicer. And you'll be amazed at how quick things come together once that little tiny window opens.
Ah, that's beautiful. That is a great, and we say they have latent learning. It seems like if you can end on that pressure off high note, the next day they come out further ahead for some reason.
Yeah. And I mean, so many people don't get the pressure. They start at 10. Well, where are you going to go when they give you something? So, you know, and then they also, if they go to 8 and the horse gives them something, then they go right back to 8. And you know, you have to keep starting at, as Monty says, incremental learning. So, you know, you've got to start at that low point, give them the opportunity. If that doesn't work, a little more pressure. But if you're already up there at 10, you don't have any place to go.
Very good. Those are great trainer's tips, Shorty Graham. I didn't doubt you for a minute. Those are awesome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts, and I'm dedicated to training horses without pain. You can learn to do it too on my Equus Online University. Western, English, the beginner, or the advanced rider, it doesn't matter. You can connect with other students online too on our forum, and there's a new lesson every week. It's a lifetime of learning for you on my Equus Online University at MontyRoberts.com.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Yeah.
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged. In England, he'll be there October 10, October 17, October 23, October 29, and on Halloween, October 31. And then in California, back in California, we have a Horse Sense for Leaders, a professional development workshop at Flagazette Farms, building trust-based relationships. And that's on November 6th. Then following those days, we have November 7th and 8th, a Wild at Heart weekend with sculptress and equestrian Pat Roberts and her friends.
Awesome. You can see more at MontyRoberts.com. Or if you want to go old school, you can call 805-688-6288. And for details about today's show, go to horsemanshipradio.com, where you can find links, photos, and more information about today's guests. And as always, we do love to hear your feedback. Please follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Monty Roberts, or on Twitter, you can go to twitter.com/Monty_Roberts. And don't forget, you can listen to all of your favorite Horse Radio Network shows with the free Horse Radio Network app. Just go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. Download it today. It's quick, it's free, and it's easy.
And many thanks to our sponsors, Omega Fields and IFA.com and Monty Roberts University. Be sure to visit all the other great shows, too, on the Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. And until next time, have many happy horse hours.